When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barachini, and Alex Hobson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Sticks in the Six, brought to you by the fine folks at the Indy Ale House and the Hockey Podcast Network. We are back to a threesome here on the show. Alex has returned from his Euro trip. We'll get to that in just a sec. We have hopefully an exciting show ahead. We're expecting a guest on today. And this is kind of, boys, this is kind of the finale of season three, I guess, because normally we don't go through August. Normally we cut it off at the end of July. Now we're into September. So this is kind of like our leap into season four. So I would say next episode is going to be the debut of season four. Boys, before we get going here, Alex, I think we got to throw it to you first, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great, boys. I'm really happy to be back. I saw you guys got up to some potting while I was over in Europe, and I was missing out, but I'm happy to be back here. And obviously, you know, the Leafs didn't leave my mind whatsoever while I was out there. I was in Switzerland. I was joking, the country that Auston Matthews made famous when he signed his extension there. So I didn't take a vacation from the Leafs while I was out there as much as I wanted to, but, yeah, I'm happy to be here. It was a great trip. I got to knock six new countries off my bucket list. Five of them I actually spent time in. I decided to throw, Germany in there as well. Because for context, I went to Portugal, I went to Spain, France, Switzerland, and then Austria. And on the train ride from Switzerland to Austria, we had a two-hour layover in Munich, so we decided to pop out of the station, have a bratwurst sausage and a couple beers. And it was, the way I see it, we left the train station, so Germany counts as well. So it was, it was a great trip. Very happy to be back. We got super sick on our one day that we had in Paris. I'll get into a little more maybe another time, but we got stranded in southern France on our way to Paris, had to get a hotel room there for the night, and we did. And then the next night we had to take a 12-hour train ride from southern France to Paris overnight. And when we woke up, it was our last day in France before we were supposed to leave for Switzerland. And we just had the worst fever. We had an awful cough. Our Airbnb was like a hospital wing. So that was a forgettable part of the trip. Jeez. But outside of that, I can't complain. Amazing time away. Got to see a whole bunch of new places, and it was definitely the trip of a lifetime. So for that, I would say it was a success, but I'm also happy to be back and doing this show.
But it sounds like you experienced the highs and the lows of travel around the world, right? So
I ever.
Yeah. So, I think I speak on behalf of Peter and myself to say that we're obviously happy to have you back, buddy. And,
absolutely
glad that you enjoyed yourselves and got to knock off a few countries there. But, Peter, how's it going out your way? Obviously no Euro trip, but, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah. Can't top that. As you know, last week, like kind of like Alex, like, you know, he was dealing with the illness over in France. I got over whatever was ailing me. As you can see, I'm a little bit cleared up right now. Not as congested, not as stuffed up as before. I thought it was allergies, but it turns out I had a massive sinus infection. So, drugs are really helping me this time around. So that's a good sign. Alex, I want to go back to your trip. You posted that sunburn, and I followed up on it. How are you feeling with that? Did you at least smear some aloe vera when you got back or right away?
Oh, Peter,
that looked bad.
It was a rough time, man. Oh, I got that sunburn, and understand, I'm just gonna give you a little bit of context here. I'm not one of those guys I'm not trying to be a cliche and say, oh, I never burn. This never happens to me, because I have burned in the past. But to put it into context, I have never burned that badly before. And we got to this beach in Portugal, and it was our second day of the entire trip. And we just had like maybe a third of a bottle of shampoo. And I think it was just that we had a little bit. One of us had a little bit of, did I say shampoo? I meant sunblock. My bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, you'll realize why I said shampoo in a couple seconds. So we had a little bit of sunblock left. And we just said, screw it. Like we'll go and get some more sunblock later. For now, this should be enough. So I took a little bit of sunblock. I put a little bit on my face and a little bit on my arms, because those are the two places I tend to burn the most. And when I tell you, I got burnt to a crisp in every single spot on my body that either wasn't covered or didn't have sunblock on. And it was awful. I got some aloe vera pretty quickly. We went to the store that night and got some aloe vera. So that did help. I was smothering it multiple times a day, every single day for that leg of the trip. But I'll tell you, I didn't even start about a week after that. So this sunburn stuck with me for almost the entire trip. And it was
the
reason I said shampoo there by accident, because our last night in Barcelona, I was running out of aloe vera and I'm a little worried. I'm like, okay, I need to get some more aloe vera. So we go to the store and there's a little pharmacy section, and I grabbed a big bottle of this gel looking stuff that said aloe vera on it, get back to the Airbnb and realize it's aloe vera shampoo.
Oh,
I didn't realize that until I rubbed it all over my body.
It started to soap up.
I just realized this is not, I'm starting to get soapy here. This is not aloe vera gel. So yeah, I made love to aloe vera for the majority of that trip. And it was rough, but I'm happy to say that upon returning, that sunburn has turned into a pretty nice tan all over my body. So
there you go.
Yeah. May have gotten some skin cancer in the process there, but, I did get a nice tan. At least it's not a fake tan, it's a real one. So
I was gonna say, welcome to the life of like a half ginger. I think I throw SPF like 500 on every time and still find a way to get sunburned. Oh, yeah. So
I feel for you, buddy.
Man, it's like, and the worst is like I always get like the sports spray suntan lotion stuff, and every time I do, I get like a nice handprint somewhere on my body just from like trying to rub it in, and there's like this.
Well, that's the one. That's the main myth with that spray sunblock.
That shit does not work.
No, it doesn't work.
Myth busted.
It's sold so that you think that you buy it and you can spray it on your body and call it a day. No, you have to rub it in afterwards. There's no such thing as just spraying and having it sink in. So, that's a myth busted right there.
Very misleading product right there.
Yeah.
You got to talk about a little bit about the mustache too, buddy. It's something that we talked about before you went on the trip, and you're still sporting it. I think it looks pretty darn good, bud.
It looks sharp.
Dude, yeah. I'm not the type to really flaunt these things and milk them, but I wanted to try something different. Figure there's no better time to experiment with some different facial hair than when I'm going abroad and I only know two people and nobody else knows who I am. So I'm like, yeah, we'll give it a shot. And when I tell you, I've received almost entirely positive feedback on this thing. I actually can't think of a single person who said, no, the stash doesn't look good. And you know what, man? I'm sure there were people out there who were being nice and biting their tongue. I'm sure I'm not actually getting 100% positive reviews on this thing. But I will say I'm in a bit of a honeymoon stage with this mustache. And it was obviously timed pretty perfectly with the call-up of Davis Schneider to the Jays. So, I've been rocking the mustache throughout my entire trip. I've still got it now, and I don't think it's going anywhere. So, that's where I'm at with this newfound love on my face, my upper lip.
There you go. Well, boys, big milestone this weekend for the Forbes family. The little Harlow turned one, officially a 1 year old.
Beautiful.
Crazy, crazy, crazy year we've been through here at the Forbes household with everything that she's gone through, but, man, exciting news that we now have two over the age of one. So other than that, I added yet another beautiful jersey to the collection. I got a nice Dave Keon signed jersey to throw on the wall at some point. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm on vacation this week, boys. So it's going to be a fun beautiful time. So I might have to do like a late night edition of Sticks in the Six quick shifts at some point with a few bubblies. No, absolutely nowhere.
Is it a staycation?
It's a staycation. It's enjoy the 40 degree weather out here in London.
Yeah.
And and try not to melt.
Dude, yeah, that was
not even leaving my place the next 2-3 days. So.
That was another thing about my trip that I mean, I don't want to come back from traveling across Europe and complain about a bunch of things because it makes it sound like I didn't have a good time. But I had the time of my life. But I'll tell you, one of my gripes with it is we showed up to Europe in the middle of a heat wave. So first couple days there in Portugal were pretty nice. It was like, you know, average like 24, 25 degrees. And then from like our third day of the trip all the way until the last day, it was like consistent 30 to 35 degrees. And then you factor in the humidity and it's up to 40. And it's, yeah, I melted quite a bit while I was over there. So I fully understand you if you want to stay inside and just sit in front of a fan the entire time that you're off. Mm-hmm. You're probably better off that way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But the little guys wanted to get outside. So I'm sure we're going to do a couple trips outside. But
just send them into the front yard and just watch them through the window.
That's right.
Daddy's here. Don't go anywhere.
Anyways, we got a couple things to get into. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully we've got a guest coming on. We're looking at, we've been talking with, Michael Tellqvist, former pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs back in 2000, third round pick, 70th overall. So hopefully he's going to be jumping on with us shortly. But before we do, let's jump into a little bit of Leaf talk. Sheldon Keefe re-signed to a 5-year extension. This is a little bit of a polarizing signing within Leafs Nation. Some wanted to see him go. Some of us are okay with the extension. Peter, let's throw it to you first, buddy. What are your thoughts on Sheldon Keefe sticking around long-term? Is this a guy that, the players are getting along with? Is this a guy that's creating a good atmosphere in the room? I know there's been some talk, especially when O'Reilly left. I mean, there was... there's a little bit of a rumor mill going around that, the culture within the room wasn't as great as it should be. What are your thoughts on Sheldon Keefe coming back on the extension?
I mean, it's kind of a win-win situation for each. If Sheldon Keefe wins, then there's going to be another contract after this 2 years is up. But at the same time, it's also a good chance to still prove that you could build off of what happened this past season, which is with finally winning a playoff series. And, his obviously everyone's going to point to the playoff success as the main issue as to why he didn't get a long-term extension because of the fact that they still want to see what he can do. But you look at what he's done in the regular season. I mean, back-to-back 50 win seasons, I believe he has like a very, very decent win-loss ratio. I don't know the record off the top of my head right now. I could try and find that out quickly. But it's very deserving. And I think that this is a chance for, Brad Treliving, because apparently he's had talks with him as well. When the extension happened, he speaks highly of him. He called him a top coach. You want to have when you've got good people, you want to keep them. So that's a good sign that the new GM himself has faith in re-signing him. And his record is 166-71-30. I mean, yeah, playoff record is not that great, but when you have that kind of success in the regular season, that's something to build off of. And because he's still very young in his coaching career to have that kind of record right now, why would you want to let that go? And you even think about like who else would be on the market, even when we were discussing whether they should keep him or not. What other viable options are there aside from him? Not very much. And considering what he's done the past four or five years since he's come in, it's a great opportunity for him. And it's a great opportunity for the team moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, worth noting, he's tied in 100th all-time for coaching wins in the NHL regular season. He's also the sixth fastest coach to reach 100 wins. Did it in 163 games. So, Alex, your thoughts on Sheldon Keefe coming back as the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, I mean, I had my gripes with Sheldon Keefe at certain points last year, and I think every Leafs fan did. But I think the number one thing to remember is that signing an extension does not mean that he's got a massive vote of confidence from management and ownership and all that. I think that more than anything, and this is just my personal theory, but I think this extension was more just to ensure that there were no distractions heading into this year and to understand that, obviously Keefe had a good meeting with Treliving when they first met. And if Sherliving, you know, being the general manager right now, thinks that Keefe is good for this team, he pointed out that he sees that Keefe has the respect of his players, which is different from just being liked by your players. He's got the respect. And, you know, we can comment all he want about our gripes with his, you know, mismanagement of certain things or his lineup decisions or his matchups when they're in the playoffs, things like that. Overall, if the guys in that room and the people who are around him every day feel he's the right option, then they're not going to go out of their way to force him out of his role. So I saw a stat. I can't remember exactly who it came from, so you'll have to forgive me there. But when you look at Ron Wilson and Randy Carlyle and then eventually Mike Babcock as well, all three of those coaches had signed extensions somewhat recently before they were fired. And that's not including Babcock. Babcock, on the other hand, though, did have multiple years left on his deal. Whereas Carlisle and Wilson, they signed extensions, and I think it was the next year for both of them they were fired. Mike Babcock obviously had made it a couple extra years into his contract, which he probably should have given how much they paid him. And he was let go when the team wasn't performing. So Keefe being extended by 2 years after this year, I really don't think that that's really much of a cause for concern. I think it just means there's no distractions heading into this season. And I mean, you saw Brad Sherliving when he was with Calgary, he had a Jack Adams winning head coach in Bob Hartley and fired him the next year. He wanted to fire Daryl Sutter had only been in Calgary for what, maybe a year or two. And then he wanted to fire Sutter. And part of the reason that he left and he stepped down from his role was because ownership wouldn't let him. And then he ended up walking anyway, so it didn't matter. But the point is, between Sherliving and between the Leafs organization, nobody is afraid to fire a coach. So Keefe being extended doesn't mean, hey, you know, we've got a guy here that we truly believe is going to be the coach to take us to the promised land within these next 3 years, blah, blah, blah. It really comes down to how he performs this year. And if there comes a point where the team is looking completely off and, you know, they look like they did in 2019 where they were just he lost the room, I don't think they're going to be afraid to fire Keefe. I think it's just his extension was just a matter of making sure they had their guy locked up and no distractions, no media coverage of, oh, are they going to fire him or is he on the hot seat, etc. This kind of puts all the distractions to bed for a little bit. So Peter, you already mentioned his win-loss record, so I'm not going to go too much deeper into his stats because we know that he does have a case to be made for sticking around, whether you like it or not. But I don't think that his case to be made is going to save him from getting fired ever. I think it's just a matter of making sure there's no distractions this year.
And considering that they still need to re-sign Nylander too, I think that was a big...
Yeah.
There's another hurdle still need to be done. So you have two out of the three major... major things that Trilivy needed to do this offseason already checked off.
Yeah.
So that's a big step forward for both the team, the coach, management, everyone involved.
Man, I think the one of the biggest takeaways, I mean, our biggest gripe with Sheldon Keefe was the fact that he kept playing players that maybe weren't fulfilling their roles within the lineup. So Justin Hall, Alex Kerfoot, both of those players who Sheldon Keefe seemed to have a hard on for are gone. That's two players out of the lineup that you don't need to worry about anymore. That could almost help the situation with Sheldon Keefe, almost force his hand to take a look at some of the other players within the organization, like Timothy Liljegren, obviously Matthew Nyes. I mean, if he's healthy, he's going to be playing. It gives you that opportunity to kind of look at these guys and force them into roles that, you know, maybe might help them succeed in a more successful way. Tyler Bertuzzi coming in, Max Domi coming in. So there's players now that, you know, Sheldon Keefe's going to have to get used to. He's not going to be able to go back to his favorite players. And for whatever reason, we saw his press conference that one year about, Steve Simmons asked about continuously playing his worst defenseman. And he said, well, that's your opinion. And it was obvious that he had this, like, almost loyalty to a fault to Justin Hall. And with those guys gone now, it's going to create different storylines and maybe the issues won't be as noticeable as they once were with those guys in the lineup. So I think that's a big takeaway as well. On top of what Alex was saying about, you know, extensions for coaches, unfortunately mean nothing. It's like an NFL contract. Yeah. You're guaranteed a certain amount of money. Doesn't mean you're sticking around for the entirety of your contract. Yeah. So
That's the main thing too, is I think it's just important to remember another thing. I won't say the main thing actually, but I think one of the other important things to remember about Keefe this year is this is the first time we're seeing Sheldon Keefe, honestly, like in his time with the Maple Leafs organization, where he's not going to be working under Kyle Dubas. So, I mean, the three of us have been, we've been critical of Dubas at times, but we've also, I would say while he was here, we were pretty positive and pretty forgiving for him for the most part. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I'm not confident that the Leafs can do even better without Dubas. And we'll have to see how Treliving and Keefe kind of work with each other. And we'll have to see if some of Keefe's habits change, because who knows, maybe some of those habits were Dubas in his ear saying, hey, do this. We want you to do this. I think it's better if we do this. So he doesn't have his favorite toys from last year. We'll see. Maybe he makes some other toys that we in turn start to get a little frustrated over. Maybe those toys are Sam Lafferty and David Kampf. Who knows? But either way, I think that he's definitely worth a chance this year just to see how he does without Kyle Dubas and having a different guy at the helm.
Yeah, and it's funny that you both brought up the fact that he doesn't have his go-to players like Kerfoot on the PK and top six, Justin Hall on the PK and top four. Coaches need to adapt and change over time. Otherwise, you're not going to go far. And whether or not that's going to happen, that it should happen this time around, because he's got new players at his disposal and ones that could be a little bit more competitive and have more upside than what they already had. That should be a sign for Key from Treliving to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, these guys may have been good for you, but I got players that could provide a bigger impact. Play them, do what you need to do with them so you can get the most out of them and win. And if Keith doesn't do that, then that is going to create a lot more headlines, because, you know, he's got better players at his disposal right now. He's not going to mid-tier level players or like a fringe, you know, third line or third pairing seventh defenseman in Hall, or, you know, an everyday third liner in Alex Kerfoot, making him into a top six. That can't happen anymore. You have a top six in Bertuzzi, a player that can move up and down in Domi. Defense still up in the air, but you're starting to see a little bit more of that will and drive and succession for Timothy Liljegren. So that's going to be big to see for me with Keith, to see if he can adapt with the players that he has instead of just going to the old status quo mentality and trying to do the same thing over and over again.
Well, as you guys said, Brad Treliving bet on Sheldon Keefe for the foreseeable future. And as such, our listeners here at Sticks and the Six can bet on sports with DraftKings Sportsbook. Can you believe we've had 7 months without an NFL game? Crazy, right? Well, good thing it's that's over. NFL is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving you a can't-miss offer for week one. This week, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5 on any NFL game. DraftKings is hooking everyone up with game day greatness. All customers can take advantage of two new offers every single game day this September. Check the app to see what you get. Download now and use code THPN to sign up. New customers can take home $200 in bonus bets instantly just for betting $5. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. See dkng.co/football for eligibility. Terms and responsible gambling resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions do apply. Well, Peter, you came out with an interesting piece recently looking at the possibility of Patrick Kane uniting with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mentioned prior to us starting the show here today that there was some rumors floating around, and we're all about rumors here at Sticks in the Six, but we saw some rumors floating around about the possibility that Patrick Kane could want to play with Austin Matthews. You mentioned the fact that there was some discussion about Patrick Kane possibly wanting to follow Alex DeBrincat wherever he goes. Take us into this idea that maybe the Leafs could be a possible landing spot for the Patrick Kane, or maybe he's not, or maybe it's not.
Yeah, the way that I went with it, it just crossed my mind because he was starting to skate, and the way that he was, you know, talking about his recovery after he had hip surgery, because that seemed to be the big talking point about his downfall last season with Chicago, and then, you know, even with the New York Rangers in the playoffs, it seemed like he started to feel like his normal self. And when I think of a normal Patrick Kane, I'm thinking of a guy that's constantly driving the play, working magic with the puck, you know, just dancing constantly in the offensive zone, ripping it top corner on his strong side or offside, and being a top five, top 10 player in this league. We didn't quite see that last year, but the fact that he was being a little bit optimistic, I guess it kind of like crossed my mind. How would he fit in with the Maple Leafs at this point? And considering his numbers, first of all, his numbers really have been on a massive decline since 2017-18. I mean, I put up like a list of all the top stats, you know, Corsi for, goals for, expected goals, scoring chances for. Everything saw a steady decrease over time, and it does not look good. And we all hear about like how he's not that strong defensively or away from the puck, and we saw that quite a bit last year, how he didn't seem as engaged, he seemed too timid at times, and he was essentially a no-show in the playoffs for the Rangers too, and they paid that, not necessarily a big price, but they wanted him to be a big part of their run, and it didn't quite happen. But also like the depth of where the Maple Leafs are at now, obviously they're still in a cap crunch, but what are you going to do with Nylander and Marner? You're not going to demote them, you're not going to shift them down, you're not going to shift them or even Patrick Kane to the left wing, because he's brought in Tyler Bertuzzi, you have promise in Matthew Knies at this point. I kind of thought that it is a possibility, but looking deep down at the numbers and the depth of this team right now and what they added in, they don't need more skill, they need a more competitive nature and drive, and those guys that they brought in have that, or what they already had in Matthew Knies, they have that, they have the ability to go into the tough areas. Kane kind of seems to shy away from that, but you still have the skill of Matthews, Marner, and Nylander to make up for that. So that was where I was going with that piece. I mean, obviously it was kind of like middle ground, but like it just doesn't seem possible. Any other year, maybe, but at this point in time, the Maple Leafs and Kane really don't seem like a fit, even though that they were trying to go in on him last year before they got Ryan O'Reilly. There was that little rumor and talk, but at this point, it just doesn't seem like it could happen at all.
Alex, I'm curious, would you take a waiver on a guy like Patrick Kane, knowing that, you know, obviously last season we saw some inconsistencies, whether it was injury related or whatnot, and then, you know, didn't have the greatest playoff run with the Rangers. Your thoughts on the possibility of a team like the Leafs signing a guy like that?
You know what? If I'm going to be completely honest, and Peter, I really don't fault you for writing that article, because we've reached the point where we check in on things like this.
Yeah.
But I think the idea of the Leafs taking a flyer on Patrick Kane is something that we probably only talk about because it's early September and we're this close to hockey being back. Yeah. Now, Peter, I understand. I've published
none taken.
Like, I understand. Like, I've written content like that before. Mm-hmm. I just think that, like, for Patrick Kane to fit in with the Leafs, he would have to take the biggest discount imaginable. I know he's probably not going to be getting a lot of term on his next deal, but he's going to be asking for more, probably more than the Leafs would be able to afford. They're pressed up against the cap right now. They'd have to make a number of trades just to fit him in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going with the route of like a 1-year deal, kind of like what Vladimir Tarasenko signed, kind of that prove it now kind of thing.
If there was the option to sign him for 1 year at $4 or $5 million, something like that, I mean, I can't say that I'd be upset with it, but I also don't see the Leafs being interested in making the amount of moves that they'd probably be required to make just to fit him in. As much as a Kane Matthews Marner line or something along the lines of that looks good and is something that, you know, we would have dreamed about in years past, I don't think that's something that's going to work out. I just think that it's a fact. There's some intrigue because he's the last remaining big name, if you want to call it that, on the market. And ultimately, if he doesn't retire this year, he is going to sign a deal like that with a certain team. But I just don't see it being the Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, I've, like you said, it's early September. I've seen a little bit of the conversation. You know, there's some people talking about bringing back Phil Kessel on a deal like that as well. And I think it's just, you know, it's one of those things where you got to look at it and just see what the reality of it is, bringing a guy like that in. And right now, I just don't know how he fits in Toronto. Obviously, it'd be a hype move by them to bring in another goal scorer like that. But at the same time, like, who misses out on being in that lineup if you bring Patrick Kane in, I guess. And that's where you got to look at it. But yeah, definitely an interesting piece, an interesting thought process behind it and the possibility that he could land there. There's still a lot of possibilities on where he could land. And New York's one of them. Buffalo's obviously one of them. And Peter, as you mentioned, the possibility of following DeBrincat could be another one as well. I do want to, before we close out here, because obviously our guest won't be able to make it today, so we'll have to reschedule at some point. But I want to mention to you guys, so I heard this story about a junior player, and I won't use names just until I get more of the specifics on it. And we all talk about trading within the game and how it's part of the business and whatnot. And I want to get your guys' opinion on this story here. So there was a junior player recently traded, and my understanding is that at some point during last season, he wanted to gain more of an opportunity, more playing time. So he did mention the possibility of leaving the team that he was on. In doing so, the coach at the time stripped him immediately of the letter that he wore on his jersey. And this off season, he was getting ready to go back to his billet family. And called up his billet mom, and she said he mentioned he was ready to come back up, bringing all his stuff up, and she said, "You might want to bring some boxes with you. I got word this week that you've been traded." So, billet mom finds out before the player. Player has no idea he's been traded. I want to get your thoughts on this, especially in a world right now where everything's driven by social media. So the chances of a player finding out maybe before anybody else could be a little bit iffy. Alex, what are your thoughts on how this whole trade story went down? And my hope is to get this player on the podcast at some point to talk about this, because if this in fact is the way that it happened, man, it's an interesting story to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, we just saw the other day, and this is a bit of a different comparison because we're talking about a Major League Baseball player as opposed to a junior player who's barely making anything. But we saw the other day that Harrison Bader of the Yankees was placed on waivers, and he didn't find out that he was even placed on waivers until 10 minutes before the game started or something along the lines of that. And then obviously he gets claimed by the Cleveland. It was either the Cleveland Guardians or it was the Cincinnati Reds. All I know is that all the waived players went to Ohio. Poor guys. Anyways, but yeah, Harrison Bader ends up with a different team. And I remember just thinking at the time, how does it so consistent? I feel like we've been hearing more of these stories lately. How does it just constantly get so lost in communication between management and players where other people, like the sources, the media sources, or even in this case, like you said, the billet mom found out first. I just don't get why it's so hard for the people swinging these deals and the people who control these players' livelihoods, essentially, why it's gotten so hard for them to just let their players know, hey, you're on your way out. We're going to be looking for a new home for you. I actually, until you mentioned that, Forbes, I had not heard that story. So that's unfortunate. And I hope that the player involved in this is going to be in a much better situation where he's been traded to and will maybe have some better communication from his general manager. But yeah, that's I mean, I've always been of the belief that if you're going to do something like that, you got to let the player know first. Like that's like they're the one who has to make these changes. And obviously, like, When you're making millions of dollars in the majors, you're probably a little more better off than being a kid relying on his billet mom. and all of a sudden he doesn't have a place to stay. I mean, I don't, like I said, I don't know this story, so it's hard for me to comment further, but I've never understood why players are not the first ones to find out when they've been traded.
Yeah, Peter, just if you had any quick thoughts on this as well. It's just it's very unique story. You don't come across it very often, so it's just one of those things that just kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, off guard and very bizarre too. Like, kind of like what Alex said, like, even at such a young age, these players have agents too. Like, where's the line between management, the agent, and the player going back and forth with that? Like, it's very, very bizarre. And even like hearing, like, listen, we all hear, like, especially younger players too in junior, they want the opportunity because they want to showcase their skill. They want to showcase who they are. And they want to catch the eye of teams, especially if he's still young. He's coming up into the draft. He wants to make his value known of what he is as a prospect or a player. But then hearing what the coach has said, you know, stripping him of the letter, then finding out that, you know, he's coming back and then he's getting traded instantly. I mean, that's just like a very, very bad slap in the face kind of thing. But like, if you like, the thing is, like, this is going off bad terms for everybody, player, coach, team, what have you. You don't want to do that because you don't want to like have those, like, you know, grudges on hand. Like, you want everything to be upfront. You want everything to be transparent. Hey, you're getting traded. Sorry about this, but we wish you the best of luck in the future. I don't know what's wrong with saying that. I don't know why you gotta leave this player in the dark like that. And then, you know, going one different direction, and then again having the billet's mother find out that he's getting traded, or that he found out from the billet mother that he's getting moved. So it's like, yeah, very odd, very bizarre. It's a very big head scratcher at this point. Like, again, kind of like Alex, like, we need to hear more about the story of how it unfolded, how it transpired. But it's very, very bizarre at this point, and very, very concerning.
Yeah, like I said, more like I said, I want to get more of the facts on it. It was just something I came across, and it's weird because with the billet families, especially in junior hockey, right? Like, that's you're building relationships with these families that you're living with as well. It, you know, I from my understanding, the billet mom was very affected by the move as well, and there's no communication either way. So, definitely something I hope to get a little bit more insight on. In communication with the player. But aside from that, boys, I don't think we have much more to discuss here. Like I said, hopefully we can reschedule here and get our guest on prior to the season starting. I know we got Peter, you mentioned possibly David Alter coming on again to do a season preview with us, so hopefully we can get that worked out and get some more exciting stuff for Sticks in the Six as we head into season four. But anything you guys wanted to add before we cut it off here for episode 135?
Hockey's just around the corner. Like, I'm just super excited.
Just super excited. There you
simple
go.
As that, right? Like, you know, after all these months of, like, you know, wondering all these ifs, ands, buts kind of scenarios of, like, players with the team and everything like that, we actually have, like, a solid picture going forward right now. So with the rookie tournament happening, training camps happening, I'm just ready to get the season started. Oh, also, you know, it's also fantasy season for, you know, football, hockey, everything. So, should be fun. Should be a fun year.
Alex, sports betting is alive and well, my friend. I'm sure you'll be delving into that a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, even closer than hockey being back, football's back. Go Jags.
There you go.
It's going to be a rough year for the Pats.
Talk about a league with a lot of storylines. The NFL is, in fact, back. So that'll be interesting as we get underway in the next week here. Other than that, boys, it's been another great episode. Alex, like I said off the top of the show, glad to have you back, my friend. Glad you made it back safely.
Thank you.
Check us all out on Twitter at Andrew G. Forbes, at P. Barrichini, and at A. Hobson Media. You can follow the show at any of the socials down below, as well as TikTok. Make sure you check us out on YouTube at Sticks in the Six, and hit us up on with that little subscribe button. It takes less than 2 minutes of your time, folks. Otherwise, make sure when you are looking for tickets to any concert, any sporting event over the next little while, sign up with SeatGeek using the promo code Sticks in the Six for $20 off. That's STICKS INTHE6IX for $20 off your first purchase. And you're giving back to the show as well. So that's always a nice thing to do for us. But until next time, folks, that's episode 135 of Sticks in the Six.